Hey guys, welcome to the Gaming Nexus Show, the podcast for people who are into video games but want something a little different from a video game podcast. And what I mean by different is, well, we take a theme, and I got to pick the theme, and not that I won the rights to pick the theme, because I really was by default, because Eric was pitying me. But I picked the theme this week, which was difficulty, and then Joe and Eric, and mostly Eric, this is a very Eric-heavy show again, bring you some stuff based on that theme. So without further ado, guys, just kind of tell me what we're kind of listening to. I've already listened to it, and I've enjoyed them both, but kind of give the listeners a little peek.
Sure, yeah. So I did a brief monologue about difficulty in games, like difficulty settings and so on, and my own feeling about difficulty in games. And then Joe and I did a throwback, and we did our top five PS1 games. And we explain how that ties into difficulty in that segment.
You know, what we didn't talk about was Ghost and Goblins Resurrection, which is the most difficult game I've ever played in my life. And I beat it, and I want my life back. Capcom, you owe me.
Did you really beat it? That's crazy.
Oh, God.
Really?
So,
how long did that take?
Yeah, no, real quick. For real, was playing Super Mario Maker the other night. Was just, you know, whatever. And somebody jumped in the chat and was like, yeah, Super Mario Maker's cool and all, but I'm not getting the reactions I usually get when you play Ghouls and Ghosts Resurrection. And I was like, is that what you want me to do? Is that what you really want me to do? And then the chat lit up and it was like, yes, yes, yes. So then I played that fucking game for 2.5 more hours.
That's a nightmare. I don't think I could play that game for 5 minutes.
And 2 hours of that was on one boss. I'm going to send you guys this clip where I kill him, but then something happens.
All right. Cool.
So, yeah. Ghouls and Ghosts Resurrection, don't play that. Or Ghosts and Goblins. Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, don't play it unless you want to have an aneurysm.
Well, my top five PlayStation games, I'm going to go Ape Escape, Mega Man Legends, Crash 3, Final Fantasy 9. Yeah.
So. That's five. Only four.
You need five.
No, it's just four.
Okay.
Yeah.
You only liked four.
Those were the only four good ones. Yeah, the only four
That's
good
fine.
Ones. So
not That's a, fine. Yeah.
Well, without further ado, then we'll just like lead right into it, guys. Music Maker.
Hello, my name is Eric Hodder, and I'm bad at video games. More specifically, I'm a game journalist that's bad at video games. You've seen the memes and the comments online, belittling game journalists, talking about how they're bad at games. I guess the assumption is that you have to be good at every type of game to write about video games, and that simply isn't true. You have to be able to make sentences and spell words to write about video games and have an appreciation for video games. I don't want to give the impression that I'm bad at all games, nor do I want to give the impression that it's on purpose. I don't try to suck at shooters. I just suck at shooters. There are plenty of game types that I'm actually pretty good at. I enjoy JRPGs, for example, because they don't take any Twitch skills. I can sit there and take time to choose my next action and think strategically about what I'm going to do. I also enjoy open world RPGs like Fallout and Skyrim and Oblivion. Actually, let me stop right there. I enjoy almost every video game that I play in one way or another, even the ones that I suck at. You see, I don't let the fact that I am terrible at Twitch-based video games stop me from trying them and enjoying them. One of my favorite games of all time is Galaga, and I am a bottom-of-the-barrel Galaga player. There's no question that if you and I play two-player Galaga, you, being pretty much anyone listening to this podcast, you would beat me. There are a variety of reasons that I'm no good at video games, and like I said previously, some of them aren't really my fault. I have nerve damage in my hands. I'm not quite sure how I got it. It could be carpal tunnel,
it could be, well, honestly, it could be my own fault. I've mentioned before on the podcast that I used to drink a lot. And as I've gotten older, I've discovered something called alcohol-induced neuropathy, which it turns out if you drink a whole lot, your liver's not the only thing you're killing. You're also killing your nervous system. And by the time I kind of stopped drinking heavily, I noticed that my hands went numb every time I did. So now that I'm, I don't know, I don't want to call myself recovered, just not a big drinker anymore. It doesn't happen nearly as often, but it still does happen, particularly when I play Nintendo Switch or other handhelds. Just holding the handheld in my hands in that position, pressing the tiny buttons, almost immediately makes my fingers go numb. Starts down at my pinkies and works its way up through my hands until finally my thumbs go numb too. By the time it reaches my thumbs, I have to set down the Switch for about 2 minutes and flap my hands around in the air like a duck, waiting for the feeling to come back to them before I can continue playing. This also becomes an issue when I'm playing intensive games that require a lot of Twitch skills. You know, this is why... Well, no. I was about to make an excuse for why I don't play games like Dark Souls. It's not true. The real reason I don't play games like Dark Souls is because I don't have the patience for them. It's funny, because there are games that are considered difficult that I actually do play and enjoy. I play all the Monster Hunter games that come out. I love them. Some people think that they're too hard or too complex, or that the battles take too long. I think it's fantastic. I'll sit there for a half hour and beat down a monster any day of the week. I also enjoy Dauntless, which uses a lot of the same mechanics. You know, it's interesting because I didn't realize until much later when I tried Dark Souls again that Monster Hunter games and Dark Souls games use a lot of the same mechanics. There's a lot of reading your enemy. There's a lot of learning their patterns. There's dodging, lots of dodging. It took me until I was into my mid-40s to embrace dodging as a mechanic. Mostly with video games, if I couldn't just barrel straight into the enemy and whack at them with my sword until they died, I didn't want to play it. Dodging and parrying are my enemies. All of this is leading me up to say, I embrace difficulty settings in video games. For a variety of reasons. Sometimes when I'm playing really big, long, involved video games, I'm playing them on a deadline. Meaning that when somebody that's not a game journalist picks up a big Ubisoft, gigantic, open world, soon to be classic, they can take anywhere from a month to 2 months to however long, years, to beat the thing. The expectation when somebody is a game journalist is that you have it beat within 5 to 10 days. For a game that is 60 to 100 hours long, and for journalists that have full-time day jobs, that's a lot of time. So you take any advantage that you can to get through the thing and see all the mechanics of the game. I openly embrace turning a game down to easy to get through it quicker. I mention it in my reviews all the time, just to be transparent. Hey, I turned this game down to easy. I tried it out periodically on normal, bumped the difficulty back up to see what was going on, and then took it right back down to easy again. It's funny because I'm playing Assassin's Creed Origins right now, and I'm playing that game just for fun. It's been out for years. But you know what? Fun for me is playing on easy. I don't want the battles to take 5 minutes. Every time I accidentally stab somebody, I don't want to spend the next 3 minutes fighting off a bunch of townspeople. I just want those battles to be done. For me, part of the power fantasy is having my character be as powerful as possible. And in that game, the way to be as powerful as possible is to crank the game down to easy. I do understand the appeal of difficult games. I do understand how fun it is to run at something and overcome it. I enjoyed Returnal last year when I reviewed it, for example. But I also openly admit that I didn't beat it, and I will never beat it. There are games that are simply beyond my abilities, and I think it's fine to admit that. I'll tell you another secret. I can't throw a ball to save my life. I've never been able to. I've always been uncoordinated when it comes to sports. I've gotten old. I can't run anymore. if a dinosaur was chasing us, you'd be best to let it eat me, because I'm the slowest one in the pack, for sure. I think it's okay to admit your shortcomings. I wouldn't even call being bad at video games a shortcoming. I would just call it a reality of being who I am. I was playing Rainbow Six the other night. Can I say that? Yeah, I think the embargo's up. I can say that. I was playing Rainbow Six Extraction the other night with Joseph and my son Aiden. For the most part, I was the first one to die in every mission. The two more skilled players had to carry me through, and I was constantly having to send them back into areas to rescue my dead body. It's part of the fun. I think it's okay. I think it's fun to play with people with varying abilities. I'm 100% okay with it, and I think everyone should be. Even people who are really, really good at video games might want to check out knocking the difficulty down to easy on occasion. I don't play every game on easy. Some games don't have difficulty settings. And of course, when I came up, there were no difficulty settings on video games, so you either rose to the occasion or just quit. But in the end, we all have strengths and weaknesses. Sure, I'm not the best video game player, but I can karaoke like a motherfucker. And while I'll never beat you at Madden, my writing skills are goddamn intimidating. I guess if there's anything that I want listeners to take away from this, it's that we all have strengths and weaknesses. It's perfectly okay to engage in things that you're not particularly good at, and it's fine to admit your shortcomings. Don't let the world intimidate you into thinking that you have to be fantastic at everything. I love video games, but I'm getting older, and I'll probably never be good at them again. Music maker. This is Gaming Nexus Editor-in-Chief Eric Cotter, and I'm here with Games and More's Joseph Moore.
Yeah.
And the topic for the podcast is picked by Elliot this week is difficulty. And I was thinking about difficulty, and somewhere on this podcast I recorded a monologue about how I don't play difficult games because I'm terrible at games. But as part of that monologue, I also say, you know, back when I was coming up, there were no difficulty settings on games. There was no way to turn down the difficulty of games, you know, Atari, NES, even into the PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 era. You either rose to the occasion to beat the game or you quit the game.
And more on that, with Atari games, there wasn't a way to decrease the difficulty. It was to increase the difficulty. You could
right.
make games harder for Atari, but you could not make them easier. So even so, man. Those games are hard.
They are hard. And so it got me thinking about a couple years ago, I went through, I still have a PS2, which has backwards compatibility with PS1.
Yes.
And I went back and I started playing some PS1 games. And even with like the Crash Bandicoot remake, you know, like the remaster of the Crash Bandicoot games,
I,
at one point in my life, I sat down and I beat those games. But now to sit down and play them, I'm like, this is hard as fuck. Like, it is so, like, they are so freaking difficult, especially the games that were made before the analog stick.
Yeah.
Like, when you're playing just, like, old school D-pad games on PlayStation 1.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what got me started thinking about PlayStation 1, and I realized that we've never done, ever, any sort of top five list, like, on the podcast at all, ever. And so, rather than go for, like, the top five most difficult PlayStation 1 games, because that's, like...
Spyro.
It's like too much. There's so many, right? Like, it's hard to choose what the hardest one was. I thought it would be fun for me and Joseph, since we knew each other so well during the PlayStation 1 era, to sit down and just kind of go through our top five, and we'll do it in reverse order, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, our top five PlayStation 1 games... And just kind of talk about them and why we chose them. And, you know, obviously, I don't know about obviously, but when I was choosing my five, I tried to stay away from the obvious. You know,
sure.
Like there are some ones that like everybody's going to put on.
Oh,
their,
my first
their top
is
five.
My first is totally obvious, and I'm sorry. I'm there's nothing.
But it's part
else.
Of, it is part of your top five. So I tried to like say like can I be legit and choose top five. Because realistically, there's about 60 games that could go in this top five.
Right.
Right?
I have honorable mentions, so there's that.
Yeah. And so I was like, could I legit pick these as my real top five, like in terms of how much I played them and how much I enjoyed them and the amount of time I spent on them and so on and so forth. And I feel like, yeah, like these are at least among the contenders for the top five, so... So I'm going to kick it over to you, Joe. I think we ought to just like jump right in. What's your number five?
Number five for me, and this is going to be crazy, right? Number five for me is Destruction Derby 2.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good
oh,
pick,
my
man.
Oh, God, dude. So Destruction Derby 2 was old Ubisoft game when they were with Reflections. It came out in 1996. Obviously, a sequel to Destruction Derby. And Destruction Derby was good as was, right? But Destruction Derby 2, it upped the graphics. It upped the mechanics. You could, you know, get, you know, better cars. There were more tracks. But Destruction Derby 2, it was so much damn infinite fun. I could not put that game down. I don't even think I beat it. I don't even think I went through everything. I just kept playing, like, the first... 4 to 5 stages over and over and over again, just
yes.
Crashing into everything. Like it's a phenomenal game. Graphically, it was really, really good. There were racing elements that rivaled, Gran Turismo's graphics, and Gran Turismo's graphics were fantastic. But Destruction Derby with all the, you know, and the announcer would be like, your radiator's blown. And I'm like, oh, shit. You know, like, it was like he would troll you. And be like, that game was, for me, definitely top five PlayStation 1 game of all time. Destruction
Derby
2.
Was there a level where they would have, it was like a bowl, right?
Yes.
And they would start all the cars along the edges of the bowl.
Yes.
And then the flag would drop in. Everybody would just race to the bottom of the bowl. And it would just be like cars flying 30 feet up in the air.
Yes.
And like mass destruction. Yeah, that was great.
In one of the bowls, there was a ramp in the, like not a like a large ramp, but a ramp in the middle of it. So when you go down that bowl and you hit that ramp, everything crashes in the middle. It's like... And there was no slowdown. It was just, you know, it was just nuts. And then your car just goes flying all over the place. Destruction Derby 2, amazing for me. For me.
It's funny how you talk about how, like, you don't even know if you beat it and so on. There were lots of games that I played like that where, like, beating it wasn't even on my radar.
Right.
Like Driver was one of them.
Mm.
It might have been Driver 2, the San Francisco one, where, like, we would sit there for hours and just pass the controller back and forth and just run the same level over and over again to see like how long we could survive.
See?
You know, and like never a thought of advancing further into the game, you know, like, yeah, I totally get that. All right. So my number five is actually kind of similar to yours. My number five is Need for Speed 3 Hot Pursuit.
Nice.
It was the very first Hot Pursuit game in the Need for Speed franchise. I think it was 1998. The first Need for Speed game was actually a 3DO port, and it was like crazy. Like the physics in it were crazy. Like I remember when you would crash in that game, you could crash in just such a way that your car would go up on its front bumper and just spin like a top. Like you could,
oh,
like
God.
There was crazy damage in that game. And it was one of the first racing games I ever played, that had split screen, you know, two player. Couch two player.
Yeah.
And so that was fantastic. But Need for Speed 2 was good. But Need for Speed 3 took it to this whole other level because it added the cops. So
mm-hmm.
you would be racing and then the cops would be there and they'd be trying to like ram you off the road and they'd throw the strips across the road to blow your tires out. And the racing itself was super tight and fantastic. But when those cops would show up, like it added this whole other level of ridiculousness. And I remember the first time I played it, seeing like the red and blue lights kind of reflecting in the windshield of your car was a graphical revelation. You know, it was like nothing I had ever seen before. Like PlayStation, like looking back at it now, it looks so primitive, but at the time it was like raw, ridiculous, great graphics, unheard of, you know, fidelity. And, So yeah, that one, out of all the racing games I played, and there were some other great ones. Ridge Racer, you know, was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
The original Ridge Racer and so on. But that's the one that, if I were going to go back to one, that's the one I would pick.
So did they do a remaster just recently of that?
They have done other Need for Speed Hot Pursuits.
Gotcha.
So they did one, I think, in the PS3 era. And then they did another one in the PS4 era, and then they did a remaster of one. I could be messing this up. All I know is that the Hot Pursuit name just like keeps reappearing in conjunction with Need for Speed, but it is not that original Need for Speed Hot Pursuit.
Gotcha. All right.
Number four.
This was tough for me, but I had to put this in here. Wu-Tang Shaolin Style. This game was released by 1999. It was a 3D to 2D fight. Like, you can kind of go around or whatever. It was a 3D fire.
What's your number three? Shaq Fu? Like, what the fuck?
No, listen. Check this shit out, right? So it was by Midway. So it was the same people that made Mortal Kombat. You can play with Old Dirty Bastard. The RZA, the GZA, all of them. There isn't, and then for no reason at all, they threw 12 other fucking characters in there, like, you know, with the different styles of Shaolin. And this is gays. You used to, you know, have friends over, and it was completely accessible. Like, you didn't have to necessarily know any moves. Like, it was completely. From, you know, you bring people over, they play Wu-Tang Shaolin Style, the fucking music is going on in the background, there are fatalities and shit. It was nuts. I still
have this
game.
Oh, that actually sounds fantastic.
No, it's really good.
It's funny because I've never heard of this game.
Oh, it's
I don't know
really
how
good.
I've never heard of it. I didn't know it existed.
1999, made by Midway, Wu-Tang Shaolin, Wu-Tang Shaolin Style. That's what it's called.
Oh my God!
That's
funny.
That's
man.
Top. That's it. That's number four. That's over Destruction Derby, and I love Destruction Derby. But goddamn, if I don't give Wu-Tang Shaolin Style a light, maybe it's just to shed some light. Maybe it's interchangeable, right? Because you know I got this honorable mention list, but maybe I'll change that toward the end. But Wu-Tang Shaolin Style number four, all time.
Oh man, that's funny. Off topic. Have you watched the Wu-Tang show on Hulu? Have you seen that?
I didn't.
Oh man!
You know what? I have a huge issue watching those things, and I think half of it is I don't want to watch. I'm sure that it was like in a positive light, but I don't want to watch the. I don't want to watch the negative light of the heroes. You know what I mean? Like the Wu-Tang Clan. I was just like, these motherfuckers are dope, and you know Biggie and all that stuff. And so when you watch these documentaries, it's always something like, oh. They had this going, and they did that, and they beat this dude up, or they was on crack. And
oh, no, you got to watch this.
Right,
it's a drama. It's a drama. It's like actors and stuff. So, like, each two seasons, 10 episodes each, really good actors. They got people that are, like, nailing it. The guy that plays Dirty is, like, perfect, you know? And it's produced by the RZA, who like, helped with the writing and all that stuff. And it's just, like, it takes them from, like... The whole first season is just like in the projects as they're starting to kind of develop their style and kind of meet each other and so on. So it doesn't like launch directly into their careers right away.
Oh, gotcha.
It's really good. It's really good. You should check it out.
Fair enough.
My number four is Silent Hill. Which I know a lot of people didn't catch on to Silent Hill until Silent Hill 2 on PS2.
Now that's a good pick, dude.
Thanks, man. It's like it was really... really original at the time. Like,
yeah.
Everybody expected it because it came out after Resident Evil, and so there was the thought that it was going to be a Resident Evil clone or whatever. It was like too close to Resident Evil, but it is so unique and weird and creepy. Like, even now, that whole mechanic of walking through the fog with the radio, and when the static starts up, you know there's a bad guy near, but you can't hear him. And of course, like, I'm sure that they originally developed that just to like... because the processing power couldn't put up the bad guys on the screen, right?
Right.
But as far as like the tension goes, you could just feel the tension in that game. And great puzzles, weird, creepy world, just all around a fantastic game. And I just thought of an honorable mention I'm going to have to mention at the end. So, yeah. So that's all I had on Silent Hill.
Again, multiple endings. The way you could fuck up at the end, like you could just completely, like all the progress you made and you completely fuck up at the end, like, you know, no spoilers. I don't know why. That game is out as old as fuck and you could easily look up spoilers. But if you want to play Silent Hill, go fucking play that shit. It's amazing.
It is. It is a fantastic game. All right, what you got for number 3?
Tekken 3.
Yeah, man. That's what's up.
Tekken 3.
Yeah. Got it.
Tekken 3 it was groundbreaking for me again. I watched an arcade game get successfully ported to the PlayStation 1, and I don't know what came first, right? Like, the arcade port or the PlayStation 1 port? Because, good God, like, if you play them side by side, it might be arcade perfect for me. And the amount of time we spent on that game before we went to the club and after we went to the club, Heihachi Mishima, and unlocking all the characters. Because they didn't have all the characters that you had in the home version. They gave you maybe 15 or 16 extra characters in the home version that you didn't get in the arcade. So, like, the home version was worth it. Tekken 3, hands down. I don't have to go on about Tekken 3. It's Tekken 3.
Tekken 3, yeah. When you got to PS2, did you do Tekken Tag Tournament?
I did. But it was still like, oh man, the thrill is gone.
I get it. No, yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Like you have your Tekken and that's your Tekken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have Tekken 7, and Tekken 7 looks phenomenal, but it plays like Tekken 3. And I'm like, Tekken 3.
Okay, so my number 3 is Poi Poi.
Ooh.
I don't know. Do you remember it?
I do remember Poi Poi. You made me play the shit out of Poi Poi.
Boy, I love Poi Poi.
I know you love some Poi Poi.
So Poi Poi was a, what's it called? Multi-tap? Is that what it was? Where you could hook four controllers up to one PlayStation?
Yes.
Yeah, so it was a multi-tap game. And, of course, we worked at the toy store, so we had the multi-tap.
That's right.
And the primary use for that multi-tap was Poi Poi. And it was just a little game where you had four players on a small arena at one time, and they would just pick shit up and throw it at each other.
Yep.
Like stuff would drop from the sky, and you would just pick it up and launch it at the other players. And like it was one of those last one standing wins sort of deals. And different obstacles would come, like a monster would chase after you or whatever. But primarily, it was just a free for all of you picking shit up, rockets, logs, rocks, whatever, and throwing it at the other players. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
It was very little
in the way of progression or costumes or a story or even like any single player mode. Like, it was just straight up 4-player melee ridiculousness.
See, and this is before you had your Power Stone, right? Power Stone.
That's exactly what I thought of today when I was looking at a video of it. I was like, oh, this is like early Power Stone.
Yeah.
What this is. This is like really, really stripped down Power Stone.
I used to get my ass on Poi Poi. But completely accessible. Everybody could play it, so it didn't matter.
Yep.
Like,
anybody that wandered in, you could just throw them a controller, give them 2-second like tutorial. This is pick up, this is throw.
Oh, you were, dude,
and it was on.
You were so good at the tutorials. When it came to like multiplayer games, like you would have everybody over and then you would be like, okay, this is what it is. Boom, 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 do this and go. And then we would just sit there and play Poi Poi. No, you, sir.
I was back and forth with Poi Poi and Point Blank. Do you remember Point Blank?
I do. I have Point Blank. I'm looking at it right now.
We had 2 light guns. We had a little gold one that I think was Jason Schroeder's,
mm-hmm.
and a more standard like plastic one. And, man, we would sit there in Point Blank, like, for days. It was such a good game.
Such a good,
ridiculously clever, addictive game. Like, it was all light gun games, but, you know, they would cycle, and it was never the same thing twice.
Yeah.
Like, it was always, just fantastic.
Now, I have Point Blank and Time Crisis.
Nice.
Looking right
good
at
job,
them
dude.
Right now. I'm fucking, yes, sir. All right. Number two. Twisted Metal 2.
Hell yeah.
Twisted Metal 2. Ikobako. That's right. Twisted Metal 1 was good for me, right? It was the beginning of the series. But boy, again, you take this game and you go, it was successful. How can we make it better? And then they go, Twisted Metal 2. And I'm like, fuck yes. I played the absolute shit out of Twisted Metal 2. And then they ruined it with Twisted Metal 3. And then they brought it back with Twisted Metal Black. Twisted Metal Black is a good game. If y'all find Twisted Metal Black, it is a fantastic game. But Twisted Metal 2, set the bar. Again, graphics didn't have to be great. You know, it didn't have to, you know, whatever. But the amount of battling and Hammerhead, the additions to the game, and, you know, rolling around with I hated Warthog, which, you know, that tells you how much you love the game because you hated a certain character. Like, Twisted Metal was a car battle game. You drive around in cars and you had different missiles and you could freeze people and you can have homing missiles and you had a special. Every car had a special. So, like, Spectre would disappear so you couldn't find him. Or Hammerhead would crush you under his monster truck tires. Like, Twisted Metal was the jam. Twisted Metal 2, it set the bar. There hasn't been a
Absolutely.
Game like Twisted Metal 2 since then. So there you go.
So I got to explain my Ikobako reference. So,
yeah, give me that Ikobako reference because we love Ikobako references.
Ikobako. When we were in the toy store in Eastland Mall in Columbus, Ohio, outside of the toy store,
yeah.
There was this little booth, like one of those booths in the middle of the mall, and it was like an African goods booth, mm-hmm. right? It was like imported African gifts and so on. And it was run by the Bako family.
Yes.
And they had this little kid,
Ikobako.
And he was probably, what, like six? Like, how old was that kid?
Six or seven.
He was a little kid. And oftentimes he would be hanging out there with his family. And sometimes Ikobako would just be running the show. They'd just be
leave.
You're going to go run the booth today. They just leave him there. So Iko would wander into the toy store, and we had the PlayStation display there, and it had all the different demos on it. And Twisted Metal was one of them. And it kind of became a thing to play Twisted Metal against Ikobako because that kid would just stand there all day long and play Twisted Metal. And so, like, I'd come to work, and other people, like Gabe, would be like, I beat Ikobako today. It's like a big deal. Ikobako was so good at it.
Ikobako, he sat at that PlayStation. We were Ikobako. Like, he knew if he was coming to work, he was going to get to play in the Play Store or the Toy Store. And so, you know, we accepted him with open arms. Ikobako was the man.
Keep an eye on Ikobako.
We should
get schooled
him.
By Ikobako. I don't know. My ex-wife Mika still occasionally mentions that she saw Iko or EA. EA was Iko's sister out in the world. You know, she runs into the Bakos on occasion.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Fun.
That's amazing. Just have Ikobako on the podcast.
Ikobako, shout out. So,
number
two, Vandal Hearts.
Oh, that's in my honorable mentions. Tell them about it, man. Tell them about it.
Vandal Hearts is Final Fantasy Tactics before Final Fantasy Tactics came out. Mm. It's a Konami game. It is a tactical RPG, very story-driven and just, like, cartoony, but bloody as hell. Like, when you would kill the other guy, so it's played out on a grid, and your characters, you know, like, as you beat other guys, you get, you know, experience points, and they progress, and they get new powers, and you can turn your archer into, like, a flying bird guy that, like, flies across the screen and shoots people. It's just fantastic. But when you kill other people, they explode in this geyser of blood. They just, like blood just shoots up from the screen, and it's just fantastic. And I often... Almost every tactical RPG that I play, I compare in my mind to Vandal Hearts, and none of them stand up.
No.
Like, there are a few that come close, and I'm like, oh, this is very Vandal Hearts-like. And that's like my measuring stick for whether I'm going to enjoy it or not, is like, how close is it to Vandal Hearts? Fae Tactics I played recently, that's pretty Vandal Hearts-like. Like, I was digging on that one. So yeah, Vandal Hearts, it is just, like, if you have the opportunity to play it, despite the older graphics, I would 100% recommend checking it out. I think it would hold up absolutely. You know, you struggle a little bit with the loading times and all that, but the game itself is amazing. Do not fuck with Vandal Hearts 2. Just,
yeah,
like,
yeah, no,
don't.
And any other Vandal Hearts, for that matter.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, don't. They ruined it. They ruined it. They made it impossible. Don't bother ever. Like, no matter how much you love Vandal Hearts 1, don't mess with Vandal Hearts
2.
Don't
do it.
It'll hurt your feelings. It'll make you sad.
Yeah, but definitely do Vandal Hearts 1.
Yeah, for sure. All right, here we are. Number one. What you
Captain
got?
Obvious is here, and he told me to tell y'all Final Fantasy 7. And he told me to leave it at that. Because Final Fantasy 7 had, what, three discs. And I still have these discs. I still
have
the case. I have the case and these discs. Final Fantasy 7 changed everything for me. Final Fantasy 7 was the only thing to replace Final Fantasy 6, Final Fantasy 3 in America, for me. So... And that's going with saying Chrono Trigger, because I loved Chrono Trigger, and I love Chrono Trigger, and I love Final Fantasy VI, Final Fantasy III in America. But Final Fantasy VII changed everything for me. Because you know what Final Fantasy VII was? It gave me my first likable villain since Megatron. And that is Sephiroth. God damn. He was so, like... He was so cool. It was so cool when he did what he did. Why am I trying not to ruin this for people? I can't! I'm not gonna ruin it. I'm not gonna ruin it. Play Final Fantasy... If you haven't, play Final Fantasy VII. And if you haven't... If you're playing the remake, it's not happened yet. But it was... I was like, what? And I remember as this kid, I was, what the fuck did I just see? What the fuck just happened in the middle of the
game? No, that's real. Like, Final Fantasy VII broke my brain several times when I was playing it. And man, I put a lot of time into that game.
Yeah.
Like, my first run through, I was probably pushing 100 hours because I maxed all those fools out. They were level 99 with 9,999 hit points. Like everything was maxed out by the time I gave up and beat that game.
It's unbelievable. And then the secret bosses, like Ruby Weapon and Emerald Weapon, and those motherfuckers just like waiting around. You're just like, what the fuck is that? I got to fight that thing? I'm not fighting this thing. I'm going on. I'm moving on. And then you beat... Fuck that.
I remember the first time, like, I ran into Emerald Weapons, the one in the ocean, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I was going to be... I'm like level 80. I got this. Like, really? Like, I can pretty much take down anything at this point. Nope.
The customization in that game, man, like, even the, you know, set the materia, and then you can, you know, like, have a barrier, like, called on all your guys at the beginning, and then you could, you know, reflect all your spells off of your guys, and it doubles the damage for the, you know, you think you have it made, and your fucking Emerald Weapon is like, nah, you're dead. Here's this thing.
I'm with you, and, you know, it is the obvious, but there's no overstating like how great that game was.
Right.
Like it in the moment that it came out, it was absolutely revolutionary. No one had ever seen anything like it before.
Right.
There's no way to express at this point what a cultural moment that was. Like, I can't think of anything to compare it to. Maybe like GTA 5. Like, as far as like cultural impact, you know, especially on the gamer community, there's really, I mean, there's before and there's after.
Right.
Final Fantasy VII, right? Like, it's definitely just a line in the sand, and everything changed after that.
And what came after Final Fantasy VII that had as much of an impact in the role-playing game genre? And I'm not talking about your MMORPGs, like... That I feel like that's a different thing, right? Because you can play those forever. Like, this game, once you go through it and you complete it, you just sit there and go, what the fuck did I just finish? What the fuck did I just finish? Final Fantasy VIII didn't do that. Final Fantasy IX, good game, didn't do it. 10, good game. Linear, good. 10-2 and 10-2, they're good games. Not Like, oh man.
They couldn't do it again.
They couldn't do it again.
Even Square couldn't do it again. And you're right, like Nine's probably the closest for me.
Yeah.
You know, like I really, really enjoy Nine. And 10 and 10-2 are also really good. And then diminishing returns after that, I think. Like
right.
12 is fun. 13
was I like 13, yeah. But I'm like the minority. And then I love 15, but 15 was just like, here's this open world. And I was like, do I really want to do this?
My answer to that was no. I did not want to do it. I've tried 3 times, and I just realized, you know what? This just isn't for me. Like, this isn't Final Fantasy for me anymore.
Oh,
like,
I'm totally playing through it right now again on Stadia.
Oh, are you? Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah, Good. That's the, you know, but again, not even close. Final Fantasy VII, number one of all time.
Oh, that's awesome.
What's your number one?
My number one is, I don't know, maybe a little unexpected, but for people that know me, it won't be unexpected. Kingsfield. My number one is Kingsfield.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you used to talk in lengths about Kingsfield.
Kingsfield games.
Man.
Kingsfield 2 is great. Kingsfield on PS2, The Ancient City, is great. And for the people, you know, I do not play Dark Souls games. I don't mess with Bloodborne and so on and so forth. But Kingsfield is where From Software got their start. Like ASCII Entertainment. That's what it would say when you boot it up. ASCII Entertainment. And From Software got their start with the Kingsfield series. And man, what amazing games. Like, crazy difficult. But unlike the Dark Souls games, and maybe I'm talking out of my ass here, because I don't 100% know, but you could level up and actually the game could become, like, if you took the time to figure out the enemy patterns and like beat them and grind a little bit, you could actually get yourself to a fairly powerful state. But just the mood cast by those games, like you're in these underground caverns and there's secrets everywhere and there's like a secret and you open the door and a skeleton pops out and just kills you with the spear and like,
yep.
It's like, ah, make you scream. And, you know, you would find like really cool pieces of gear just laying around. They make this little tinkling sound, tinkle, 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 and you could like hear it far away. And as you got closer, it'd get louder. You'd be like, I know it's around here somewhere. Like, I can't express like just the mood and the feel of playing those games. And I have said it a million times. I wish to God they would go back and make a modern Kingsfield game and not necessarily change the mechanics that much, just upgrade the visuals so other people would like grasp how fantastic those games really are.
Yeah,
but definitely the first person RPGs I ever came across, and certainly some of the best.
Kingsfield, man, I remember you used to talk. I'm looking over it now. You used to talk about this shit and like you Kingsfield. I'd be like, oh, you know, okay, motherfucker, like we Kingsfield. But yeah, no. There are remasters. But
like homemade, you know, remasters.
There's
like a community online that's like making new Kingsfield games.
We're grabbing.
So, yeah, that's a good pick.
Thanks, man.
Try to go from the obvious. All right, your top 5 honorable mentions. Very quick explanations. Go.
I only have one honorable mention written down, and that's Tecmo's Deception.
Ooh, sir.
Which is
sir.
Just a fantastic, crazy, crazy game. Like, I remember when it came out, people were like, wait, what? Like, wasn't it something like, you are the devil? Or like,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like super satanic. Like, it leaned like far into the satanic aspects of the game. And later on, the franchise kind of pulled back from that a little bit. But essentially,
which ruined it.
You've got this evil castle, and you're trying to lure people into your evil castle, and before they come, you set up traps. So it was kind of like an early Orcs Must Die sort of situation. Mm-hmm. Like, you set up all the traps, and then, but instead of like waves, there would just be like one person, and they'd come in, and then you'd set off your traps in succession. So like the spikes would come out of the wall, and they'd push the guy into the other wall, and he'd fall into the lava pit, and then like you'd drop a rock from the ceiling on his head. So you had to like set him up to create these crazy chain reactions. And you were just killing people and taking their souls. Like, that was the whole deal. And eventually, I think Tecmo Deception 1 had monsters in it, so you could create, like, a werewolf that would come out and, like, chase them around and stuff, too. And so it was all about just terrorizing people that came to your castle, and they were like heroes, like, I'm coming to the castle, and you'd be like, yeah, you're gonna get a rock to the face. So yeah, it's very fun, super super fun game, and they've never, it's like some of the others, they've never been able to recreate it. Like, yeah. Other deception games are fun, but that first one, man, wow, so great.
That, okay, all right, there you go. I have Rival Schools, that's the 3D fighting game, Capcom. Mortal Kombat Trilogy, which was dope because it was nice crossover. You could choose like old Raiden and new Raiden in the same game, or Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat 1 and Johnny Cage from Mortal Kombat 2, because he was never in Mortal Kombat 3. So Johnny Cage came back and you was just like, holy shit. And then like Rain and Smoke and all that shit was, or Noob Saibot was introduced in that game. So, and then you could play as the bosses. So Mortal Kombat Trilogy should have been up there, but not enough. And then, I have Vandal Hearts. I had Jumping Flash.
I never understood it. I never understood the appeal of Jumping Flash. Like, people are either into it or not. And
soundtrack.
I was not, I guess.
Soundtrack. Yeah. Soundtrack. Understood. Jumping Flash was like, oh shit, Jumping Flash. Jumping Flash, you know, whatever. And then, Toeball number one. Fighting game, Squaresoft. It was one of the first 60 frames per second games. So when you're watching this game, you're like, what the fuck? Well, this is super cool. But you weren't a 60 frames per second asshole on online. So you were just kind of like, this is moving kind of sweet. But you didn't know, because, you know, you just didn't know that when you got the Ridge Racer remake and it was in 60 frames, you still didn't know. Like, they was like 60 frames and you was like, you don't care. It looks great.
Just saying. Yeah. Do you remember Bushido Blade?
Of course, one hit kills.
One hit kills, man.
They did a love letter to Bushido Blade, but I forgot what the game is called.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not good. But yeah, there is our top five PlayStation 1 games. What's yours?
I'd love to hear.
In the wherever you leave your comments. Don't be a bitch about it either. Don't be a bitch about it. This is us, okay? Don't be like, oh, you picked Mortal Kombat Trilogy, you're an asshole. Like, don't be that guy. Or girl.
No.
Or person. Or Martian.
Make it fun. We're just here trying to have fun.
Yeah.
We don't want haters.
We don't want no drama.
We just won't respond. We just won't respond to your drama. Pretend like you're not there.
That's what we're shooting for. But god damn it. It's so hard. It's so hard. All right, that's what you guys want. There you go. Top five.
All right, y'all. Back to the Gaming Nexus show. Music maker.
So Eric, there was some big news today.
Yeah, I think the last segment, we need to talk about the difficulty of being a Sony fan, because Sony fans took a hit today.
They got Spider-Man and they got nothing else.
Yeah, we were recording this on Tuesday and the news just broke this morning. And it's funny because I was like doing day job stuff. And then I opened up my Gaming Nexus email at maybe 9:30, and the press release was in there. And so I was like an hour and a half getting the news, but oh my god, like, unbelievable. Microsoft bought Activision Blizzard for close to $70 billion. $70 billion, friend.
I can't even calculate that. $70
billion. How much did Disney buy Lucasfilm for? Does anybody know offhand?
In the millions. Definitely not with a B, right?
No, it was in the billions.
Oh, was it really much?
Yeah.
But $4 billion.
Oh.
$4 billion.
$4 billion. Chump change. It's nothing.
Activision Blizzard was worth what is that, 16, 17 times what Lucasfilm was?
Yeah, but do you think
Star Wars?
If it was sold the same day as, you know, Star Wars was to Disney, it wouldn't have gone for this amount of money back then.
Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Like, come on. You really think? No way. It would have gone for the same amount today as it would have back then.
I still think it would have been more than $4 billion.
Maybe a little bit, but not much more. I can't imagine it being 10.
So the repercussions of this are kind of mind-boggling for a number of reasons. Number one, we have the precedent of what happened when Microsoft bought Bethesda. Mm-hmm. And that was essentially that Microsoft honored the Deathloop Sony timed exclusivity.
Sure.
And that was it. Everything else went over to become Xbox exclusive. And the entire Bethesda back catalog immediately appeared on Game Pass. Right? So you can hop on Game Pass right now. You can play all the Dooms, all the Wolfensteins, all the Fallouts, you know, all the way back to Fallout 1. All that stuff is there, right? Bethesda had what? 40 games under their belt? Tops?
Sure.
Like maybe? I mean, I don't know the exact count, but
sure.
It's not a ton. Activision. Activision goes back to the Atari 2600.
So
Activision made Pitfall. Like Activision all the way through NES and Super NES and like all that stuff is all underneath that umbrella. And it's staggering. When you go, I went onto Wikipedia today and looked at a list of Activision games, and that's not even counting the Blizzard stuff. Like I'm not even to Blizzard, which is its own, you know, siloed, I don't know what to call it. Craziness. But Activision itself, though, oh my God, there's so much stuff. Tony Hawk, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro and Skylanders, all the Call of Duties ever. It's endless.
World of Warcraft, StarCraft.
All those old Spider-Man games, Spider-Man Altered Dimensions or whatever that thing was called. And, you know, all those old ones from PS2, PS3 era. That was all Activision. Marvel Ultimate Alliance was Activision. You know, and I'm sure there's like rights issues with some of that stuff. It's not like they're going to go plopping like all their Toy Story 3 games on there or whatever. Yeah. And like the Guitar Hero things aren't exactly going to show up immediately, you know, because there's not the peripherals and so on. But nonetheless, like the stable of games that they got is astounding. Just astounding. So like you think of that in terms of, oh, a lot of that stuff is going to be on Game Pass, I would say in the next month, probably, right?
Well,
they're at least going to start a trickle.
There's some things that are happening here, but I'll let Elliot
I think is going to happen, right? Think of Netflix. Think of Netflix back in the day when it was just DVDs, and then it was a little bit of streaming, right? And then it became Netflix making their own content, right?
Right.
You don't have Netflix lost The Office. Netflix is just lost Friends or is getting ready to lose Friends, right? Netflix is losing all these big things that made Netflix huge, right? The Office made Netflix online, right? I mean, they say what you want about it, but like people bought Netflix because of The Office alone, right?
Yes, true.
And that's
Absolutely.
What happened in Game Pass. That's Game Pass, right? Game Pass is going to start losing these big games from publishers that are not Microsoft owned because people are going to say, I'm going to make my own Netflix, which they already are. They're already making other video game versions of Game Pass, right? Sony is going to make one, all this kind of stuff. And how is Microsoft going to respond? Well, they're just going to buy fucking everything they can buy, and then they don't have to worry about that. It's the same thing Netflix does, right? Netflix is Netflix stuff now, right? I don't watch Netflix for the only thing
other
I can
stuff.
Think of
NBC
is Seinfeld.
Shows, yeah.
It's Seinfeld. Seinfeld's the only non-Netflix show that I watch on Netflix. Everything else is Netflix-based shows. It's going to be the same for Game Pass. Game Pass is going to doing the same thing that Netflix did, where it's their own content. It's all their own stuff. And maybe they'll even, you know, get rid of some of their stuff that is their own for a little while, right? Maybe they'll mysteriously, some of the bigger things might go away for 9 months and then come back up and they'll make a big deal out of, oh, yeah, look, we like refined it in this way.
Coming back out of the vault.
Yes.
Right.
That's exactly what's going to happen, right? They are trying to prevent Disney Plus from being a thing. Right, they're trying to prevent Peacock from CBS All Access and Paramount. Right, this is what they're doing. This is their response. They're trying to get ahead of it, like Netflix did. exactly what it is, right? I mean, it's
that's a very smart
cutter,
analysis,
right?
That's
it's
a very smart
like
analysis.
It.
They looked at the difficulties that Netflix ran into being supported by the other content and learned lessons from Netflix's problems and are getting out in front of it by just opening up the wallet and plunking down. But I mean, like, good God, that's a lot of money. Like, yeah. Can't even, it's an unfathomable amount of money. Like, I don't know how much money Microsoft has in their pockets, but I imagine any corporation is going to have some, yeah, they're going to have some
in cash,
serious,
right?
Like meetings and whiteboard sessions before they open up and plunk down $70 billion. Like,
because they're
really
not spending
Bob,
it on Microsoft
with a B?
Teams, right?
Really?
Right. As we mentioned earlier, off mic.
No, that was $70 for Microsoft Teams.
Right, right.
$70.
Exactly.
So now pitch a fiver over to Outlook.
Yeah. So, Joe, what were you going to say?
Well, so everybody's panicking. Everybody's, like, going crazy. Everybody, you know, selling to what do they call it? The Sony ponies are losing their shit. Everybody, well, first of all, Activision, Blizzard, and King. And for those of you who don't know who King is, King makes Candy Crush. And
yeah.
Candy Crush has like 6 games, and they print fucking money. That also comes with Treyarch, Raven, High Moon, Beenox, Sledgehammer Games, Infinity Ward, Demonware, and Toys for Bob. Toys for Bob is behind the Spyro and Crash Bandicoot remakes. So they are
Toys
also
for Bob. Toys for yeah. Bob is not to be fucked with. Like,
no. Not to be fucked with at
They are
all.
Serious. That's serious. And yep. Like, lest we like just kind of glaze over Candy Crush. Candy Crush is like the biggest
yeah.
moneymaker in video games,
yeah.
period.
Still.
You know, like it's billions of dollars a year that Candy Crush is pulling in. I would imagine some of that billions that Microsoft threw down was Candy Crush alone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing I was going to say is that the transaction is subject to customary closing conditions and completion
yep.
of regulatory review
yep.
and Activision Blizzard shareholder approval. The deal is expected to close in fiscal year 2023. So there are people out there who are saying instantly
yeah.
that you're not going to be able to play Overwatch on your PlayStation. That
oh,
is not
that's
true.
Silliness. That's silliness.
Calm the fuck down. They're not going to go exclusives right now. That is not true. I need everybody to chill.
But maybe Overwatch 2.
Oh, I don't see that happening.
Oh, but Overwatch 2 got pushed back. I bet we don't see Overwatch 2 until late 2023 at best.
But I guarantee it won't just if Microsoft is
about,
smart.
About the time that Zelda comes out. So, I think
I like how you snuck that in there, you motherfucker.
I think that there is a chance that Microsoft goes Minecraft on Call
that.
Of Duty and Overwatch
yes.
because
yes, sure.
there is serious money to be made with those franchises on other platforms. When you
Correct.
Look at how many copies of Call of Duty were sold on PlayStation, which is still the number one console, still has the biggest install base, that's leaving like, I don't know. Let's just say, just out of the blue, pulling numbers out of my ass, let's say 6 million copies, right? I'm sure it's more
yeah.
than that. But let's just say 6 million copies of Call of Duty times $70, right? So 70 times 6, that's a lot of money just to be leaving on the floor, you know, because you want to bolster Game Pass, which is essentially what the play is if you make it exclusive,
yeah.
right? Is that you're
yeah.
going to, you know, make a bigger case for Game Pass. I think they can do the Game Pass stuff without going exclusive on some of those big franchises, because I think like taking those to Xbox exclusive would be kind of shooting themselves in the foot a little bit.
Yep.
And Microsoft is, after all, a publicly owned corporation. They have an obligation to their shareholders to actually make money. So, I mean, a case could be made either way, but I think there is a good chance that some of those bigger franchises will not go exclusive. Not to mention, Microsoft has kind of also picked up a reputation lately for playing nice with others, you know, like
yeah.
they congratulate Sony when they have a good release. They, you know, they reach out and, you know, post about Nintendo when something cool is out there, you know, so they have kind of bolstered this reputation as industry nice guys for video games. And so, you know, it could go either way. It'll be interesting to watch it play out, though. As somebody without a real horse in the race, you know, it's interesting to just watch and see what happens. Like, I'm all for Xbox getting tons of stuff, and I'm all for Sony getting tons of stuff. And, you know, the more games made, the more gamers win, regardless of which system you're on. So.
And also, Sony and Tencent are still bigger than Microsoft, technically, even after this, I believe. I saw something about that. Like, Tencent is still, you know, they're still
Tencent
not
is still in, the truth.
Yeah. And Sony's still pretty big. Like, they're not, you know. And they'll respond, right?
I don't, so.
There'll be something.
And if they do, that's, again, that's good for us, right? That's good for gaming. That's good for us. That's good for, you know, whatever. I think the other side is people are also worried about that. Now that all these games are coming to Game Pass, nobody will buy physical copies anymore. And that is, God, you guys.
Yeah,
I just
but
put four arcade games in my fucking basement. Like, these
but remember,
things.
Remember, like, with Xbox One, how everyone was like, no, you can't do you can't do digital only. And now, like, I own three physical copy games on my Switch.
Like, I
you know,
I,
I
own
mean, like,
a
I
ton
so
of physical
little.
Copies on my Switch.
See, I'm the opposite. But, like, with PlayStation, I only own physical. Right, so like some
I bought a PlayStation 5 with the disc drive, and I have zero physical PlayStation 5 games.
Yeah, I'm moving towards less and less.
But I mean, how many, like, we can. Well, that's a different.
And that's just preference. I think that's just preference, right?
Well, you know, being here, you know, we get games all the time. So, you know, most of the stuff is digital. Had I known that that was going to be the way, then I'd have been like, oh, you know, give me a digital one. But, you know, whatever. Like, I still don't think that it's going to be the end of.
I don't think it's the end.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Think it's the end,
it's,
but
it's years out.
But it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's getting there, man.
Yeah.
A couple of generations from now, you know.
So, yes, I think Sony's answer. I think you're right, Elliot. I think Sony's answer may be the Netflix esque Sony stuff.
Which
but
is,
man,
which they've been working
y'all,
on, right?
Y'all gotta come with the PlayStation 1, 2, and 3 games. Y'all gotta come with the fire.
Really
and then
do.
That'll put everything back together. Everything will be fine.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, PlayStation really has eaten it. Like, they ate it at E3, and then
they
ate it with Bethesda, and now they're eating it again with this Activision thing. So, they have to really come out swinging. And meanwhile, Nintendo's over in the corner, like, "Hi guys, I'm fine.
Yeah, they don't care.
I'm selling
we're
more than everybody. Doop
doop.
Yep.
Yeah. La 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 la."
Good times.
Good
times,
man.
On
so,
that
yeah,
note,
everybody calm down.
I think we should probably let listeners know that there's going to be a slight changes in the show going forward.
Slight, yes.
Elliot is going to temporarily take a step back and focus on his other activities with his life and his wife and his other podcast and other Gaming Nexus things. And so he's no longer going to be leading the show every week, but I do think we could probably expect him back on occasional segments and so on.
I'm sure.
I think I can rope you into that on occasion.
You sounded so excited.
He was
that.
Yawning as he said it.
Oh, sure.
Yawn, fuck you guys.
Also, Elliot, while we are here, we do want to thank you for starting this journey, sending us on our maiden voyage, if you will. Thank you. Thank you.
Of course.
We'll keep it going as long as we can, man. And obviously, come back, bro. Come back.
Well, 100%. Elliot has been the driving force on this. And also, those who are missing Max this week, Max is still with us. He is not feeling well once again. So I think Joe is going to take over the reins and be our editor and production guy and all that stuff going forward. And I will continue showing up and saying dumb things.
I like it. Also, Max... his game, Ocean's Heart.
Oh,
is
yeah.
On
we really
Switch.
We really should talk about that. I was really hoping that he was going to be here.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to talk to him about this.
Yeah.
We've kind of like guessed that it was that Ocean's Heart, Max's game, was coming to Nintendo Switch, but he was, you know, under legal obligation not to come right out and tell us. So he stuck to it like a trooper, man. Like he really stuck to it no matter how much we poked and prodded. But the official announcement happened this week. So Ocean's Heart is coming to Nintendo Switch. And yes. It will be available. Does anybody know the date offhand? It's in February, right?
I thought the second, but the second's on a Wednesday, so I don't know if that's true.
Looking it up.
Yeah, we should really have the date. And I believe the price was $14.99, which is a very
February 10th.
Nice.
$14.99. I will be buying it day one.
Day one. Yeah, it's day a very one. Reasonable price for a game of that scope. And of course, you know, Max made it and he's a genius. He did all the art. He did all the music. He did everything.
Everything.
You know,
yeah.
He taught himself to code to make this game, and it's pretty stellar. So please, if you have the opportunity, check out Ocean's Heart on Switch.
Congratulations, Max.
Yeah. Congratulations, indeed.
All right. Well, I guess on that note, we will catch you guys next time.
Oh, not next you. Time.
Not me.
Not you.
Yeah, not me.
I guess on that note, we will catch you guys next time.
Like how your eyebrows like floral up there, like everyone
next
can see.
Time yeah. on the Gaming Nexus show. Well, you just explained it, so now you gave him a visual.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
What I wanted. That's what I wanted. See, that's what we're gonna miss. You giving the visuals.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Oh god.
All right, bye y'all.